Hey guys, the following podcast is a Lady Gang Network and Podcast One production, which means it's going to be awesome.
Welcome to The Stacks, a podcast about books and the people who read them. I'm your host, Tracy Thomas, and on today's episode, I am joined by Jenny Lee. Jenny Lee is the author of Anna Kay, a modern day retelling of Anna Karenina, and the brand new sequel to Anna Kay entitled Anna Kay Away. On today's episode, we talk about pandemic brain, we talk about the challenges of modernizing a classic, and of course, we talk about Jenny's favorite books. Jenny will be back the last week of May to discuss Anna Karenina by Leo Tolstoy for the Stacks Book Club on Wednesday, May 26th. If you haven't donated to Million Book Project yet, it's not too late. We are still trying to raise $50,000 and we are very close to hitting our goal. The fundraiser ends on Thursday, May 7th. So if you can, please click the link in the show notes and donate to Million Book Project as they bring books and libraries into prisons to counteract what prison does to the human spirit. If you love this podcast and want inside access, book conversations, discounts on merch, and a lot more Stacks goodness, please consider joining the Stacks Pack on Patreon. For your monthly contribution, you get to join a community of book lovers and get to know that you're helping make this podcast possible. If this sounds like you, please head to patreon.com/thestacks. I want to give a special thank you to some of the newest members of the Stacks Pack. Janice Goff, Nicole Crozier, Stephanie Williams, Elizabeth Venter, Amy Irvin, Julie, Susan Howard, Amanda Heesh, Faith Park Dodge, and Amanda Bernardi. Thank you all so, so much for helping to make the Stacks a reality every single week. Okay, you've been patient. Now it's time for my conversation with Jenny Lee. All right, everybody. It is the episode that has sort of been in the making for over a year now. I am joined by Jenny Lee, author of Anna Kay and out now, Anna Kay Away. Jenny Lee, welcome to the Stacks.
Thank you. Hi, Tracy. I'm so excited to see you, but like meet you virtually while we record this.
So for people who don't know, last year when the pandemic first started, Jenny's book Anna Kay came out and I was like, I want to do things to support authors. So I started doing these Instagram lives that I was calling the Stacks Quarantine Tour. So they were like little mini book tours. And Jenny was my first person that I did it with. And we both live in LA. And at the end of our thing, we're like, Jenny, you have to come on the podcast. We'll do it in person when this is all over, thinking it was going to be like the fall.
Yeah. Totally.
We're recording this in April, so it's been 13 months, but there is a silver lining. We are both going to be fully vaccinated, and we are going to record the conversation about Anna Karenina live in person with one another. So yay! I'm very excited.
Me too.
But for now, we'll start where we sort of always start, which is, can you just tell the people a little bit about yourself?
Whoa, boy, that's a big question. I guess in terms of me as an author, yes, I live in LA. I am married. I have a wonderful husband who I dedicated the first book to, who has two English teachers as parents. So he's very helpful in the editing process. So I recommend that to any of you writers out there. You got to look for a nice husband or a mate who can help you with those things. And I have a 135-pound Newfoundland dog, which makes an appearance, named Gemma, which also appears in Anna Kay and the second book.
And you also do television writing.
Yes.
That is like your background.
Yes. I'm a TV writer and producer as well. So I moved to LA just to kind of pursue the TV aspect. I'd been writing books for a while, but you know, you got to make a living a little bit, sometimes yes, more than you can in writing just books.
I have to say, so I've read Anna Kay, which I loved, which everyone listening knows I'm obsessed with that book, even though it's totally not something that I think that if you presented to me, I would be like, this is my kind of book. But in fact, I love rich kids doing things.
Yeah.
So I love the book. And in Anna Kay Away, you have sort of, the thing I love about your work is that you always have like little Easter eggs, like about your life. Like Gemma makes an appearance. I think fellow bookstagrammer Jordy sort of makes an appearance in Anna Kay Away.
Right.
And then also, I think you wrote for Zendaya's TV show when she was a little girl.
I did.
And she makes an appearance in Anna Kay Away too. So I sort of love that. And funny story, I actually
Zendaya's father was my PE teacher in middle school.
No way.
I knew her when she was like 2 years old. I've known her father for years and years and years, but it's every time I see her, I'm like, I can't believe she's like 10 years younger than me. So she was two when I was in middle school.
I can't believe it either. I mean, she was 15 years old when she started Shake It Up, and that was her very first TV show. And then to see her, like, watch her career explode, it's incredible to see.
It's incredible. Amazing.
Yes. And she also, at 15, she wasn't as tall as she is now, but we saw in that first year, I saw her. She wasn't my height because I'm only 5'4 then, but she was already taller than me, but she really shot up in that 1 year. We were like, oh my gosh. So suddenly she's taller than everybody.
Well, both her parents are super
so
tall.
So tall. Yes.
So tall. I mean, she comes by the height, honestly, for sure. Not that this is a Zendaya like fan club, but it sort of is, at least for me.
Yeah.
Okay. So for people who don't know, Anna Kay was a adaptation of Leo Tolstoy's Anna Karenina, which is our book club pick for May. So everyone read up. You can do it. We've done it. You can do it. But I want to know how you came to this idea of adapting this classic, sort of why, and then how you decided where you were going to place the characters in this modern retelling, like teenagers in New York, how you do that process.
It was sort of, you know, I'm going to tell you, it was a very organic thing because I have to say that it was my young adult debut novel, Anna Kay. So I'd never written young adult before. I mean, I obviously had read certain ones that, like, you know, John Green, The Fault of Our Stars, The Hunger Games, et cetera, that were young adult. But I can't say that I was like a big young adult person reader in general. So I have always loved Anna Karenina, the book. I read that when I was 15 years old and was like grounded in high school. It's another story. And my sister, my older sister, who was at Brown, was taking Russian literature, and she had sent me a copy of the book and was like, you have time because you're grounded. Read this. And I'm like, yeah, no, thank you. 800 page novel. And then I was desperate and I read it and I was like, oh my God, I was obsessed. I loved the book. And then I have since read it almost every decade again. Mm-hmm. And it's so different every like stage of your life. Cause as a teenager, I certainly skipped some of the slower parts and was like really obsessed with the doomed love affair between Anna and Vronsky. Like that was my favorite part. So the retelling wise is that I've always loved seeing film adaptations of books. And so I've seen every single Anna Karenina adaptation. So in 20,
how many are there?
There's a lot. Vivian Leigh plays her. yeah, there's a lot. That's like black and white. They've done like a Russian version. There was like a Russian TV show. So I've always tried to look for some.
Okay.
In 2012, I was in New York City at Christmas time, and my mom was there with me, and I was divorced from my first marriage, and it was just the two of us. And so I was like, oh my God, we need activities. And Anna Karenina was playing at the Ziegfeld Theater, which is sadly no longer there.
Oh my gosh.
Yes. And we saw it on Christmas Day. So it was just like this, like, such a great adaptation to see. I mean, I didn't love the total movie, but I love Keira Knightley. I love the clothes. I love the jewelry. I loved that their relationship and chemistry was great on screen. And so afterwards, my mom had read Anna Karenina as well, but she'd read it actually in Korean. Like, my mom is actually a really great reader and, like, has read lots of classics. But usually she has to read them in Korean, and sometimes she can read them also in American, but it's tricky. So we kind of discussed, we just got into a really long conversation about how sad it was of, you know, Anna's like, what happened to her? You make one mistake. And coming from my mom are very different generationally and like opinion wise about gender and everything in every direction. But it was sort of interesting where my mom was talking about Korea and how it kind of is still sort of, it's not the Russian 1800s, but it's very a male patriarchal society where I have always been very independent and very like female forward and like a feminist myself. So we just had very different takes about like the tragedy of it all. And then I was thinking, though, in talking about it with her, it really is a story about people's first experiences with love and like what it does if you look at it through all the characters' lens. And I was thinking, I don't know, it just popped in my head. I was like, oh, if you did this in a modern day adaptation, probably have to be teenagers, because a lot of people like have their first experience of love or what they even think is love, even if it's not, doesn't turn out to be so, in high school.
Right.
And so, go ahead.
No, I was just going to say that's so interesting, because my next question was going to be, what do you think we gain or lose from them being teenagers? Because okay. in the original, they're adults.
Right.
And so there's like different stakes. I mean, we're not going to spoil the book, but just this happens early, is that Anna has a child,
right.
which in your version, obviously, she does not have a child. So like that was one of the things I was like, I wonder what we gain and lose in this conversation with teenagers.
I know. I decided to pick teenagers because one of the big things was, I mean, I really did have a whole like, who am I to think I can... It wasn't... It's never a rewrite of Tolstoy. It was basically an adaptation. So I felt like a lot of... weirdness about that. Anyway, it just was one of these like random ideas I ended up having in the middle of the night at the hotel. I couldn't sleep and I went down to the lobby because I'm sharing a room with my mom. And I was sitting there and thinking about like the movie and everything. I was like, oh, if it was a YA adaptation, what also popped in my head, I was like, oh my God, New York would be perfect, right? Because you could see New York City. And then obviously you need the train, which we'll get into in the next, you know, the what it means in the other podcast. But I was like, oh my God, you could do Greenwich, Connecticut as St. Petersburg, and then Moscow could be New York City with Metro North. And it just kind of all came at once. I emailed my book agent, like literally right then. I was like, what do you think about like a YA retelling of Anna Karenina? And she was like, she'd write me back immediately. It was the middle of the night. But 2 days later, she was like, it's a brilliant idea. Write it now. And that was 2012, though. And I tried a couple times, but I was in LA working on TV shows. I didn't have much free time and I couldn't figure out how to do it like structurally. So I don't know. I figured it out in early 2018. And that's when I wrote it finally. So I was like, maybe it was marinating for like 5 years. So who knows?
Oh my gosh. I didn't realize that the idea came so far before the actual writing of it. That's so interesting. Was there something that happened that made you be able to write it? Like, I mean, after kind of playing with it for 6 years, was there like an inciting incident or like you watched the movie again or something?
The inciting incident was so, I don't know, it's so crazy to me, like even thinking about it, because I was like, oh, this is one of those again, like it's like it's marinating and you're ready. I had minor surgery in early 2018 and I was like on bed rest basically. Just for 1 week, I had to be like on bed rest, heavily medicated with Percocet and Soma, which is called a Las Vegas cocktail, which does make an appearance in that book because that's what Alexander's on. And I like named it because I found out about it then. I had not watched Game of Thrones because I'm a person who wants to read the book first and then watch things. And so during that week, though, I watched all of Game of Thrones up until the last season because it was the year before that. And watching it, I got obsessed with it, like everybody else in the country. And then I went back and started reading the first book. And I was like, oh my gosh, it's so similar. And as a TV writer, all of a sudden I was like, oh my God, this makes perfect sense. I have to think of it like a TV writer, which is like there's so many characters in Anna Karenina in my adaptation. I kept being like, how am I going to do that? How am I going to write that as a book? And I was like, I should write it and structure it like a TV show, like how I would lay it out. And those short, super short chapters should be thought of as scenes. And it just totally unlocked for me. And I wrote that first draft, I think, in 8 weeks, maybe. I mean, 529 pages. It was crazy.
Oh my gosh.
I was obsessed.
I know. I think I thought about that too when I was like, when I was agreeing to have you on the Saks Corn tour. I was like, okay, I have like 4 days before we're doing this. And I told everyone when we were doing it, I was like, I can't guarantee that I'll finish your book. I'll definitely start it, but I can't guarantee that I'll finish it. Of course, you were the first person. I picked up your book and was like, this is an 800 book distilled down to like a 400 and something page book or whatever. I was like, yeah, fucking right. I had it on my Kindle because I don't even think we were mailing things at the time. Like I couldn't get a physical copy. And I was like, there's no way. And then I picked it up and I read it, I think, in 2.5 days because it was so good. And it reads, you're right, it reads like a TV show or like it just moves so quickly, which we can talk about the difference between that and the original when we get there. Because I think there's a difference. So you've adapted this thing. People love it. Smart people like me, mostly, you know, like I love it.
Right.
Like young people love it. People who don't think they're going to love it, love it. Like it's a hit. Like it's a book hit. And then it comes out a week before the pandemic.
Yes.
I know you had at least one live event at Chevalier's, my local bookstore.
Yes.
And then all of a sudden it's locked down. All your events go online and you have agreed to write the sequel.
Yes.
So I want to know what the fuck that was like, because you are truly like the pandemic author. You were the first, like people who are writing books that are coming out now, they have a sense like, I'm going to do a virtual tour. I'm going to live like, it's going to be like this. I'm going to be you know, promoting at all these places and it's all going to be from my house. But you didn't really know what was going on and you'd agreed to write a follow-up. So I want to know sort of what that was like for you. Yeah.
Where I can say Anna Kay was like this divine and such a fun experience of writing the first book, that sequel, it really took a lot out of me. I mean, global pandemic aside, I don't know. I mean, obviously it's hard to separate. When I sold the book, there was no plan for sequel. When I sold it, I did get a 2-book deal, but it was like untitled second YA. It wasn't like, I was like, oh my God, I definitely want to write a sequel and turn it into a series. I don't think I had realized that there were so many young adult series. Like, I just didn't know that that was a thing. And it very much seems to be with a lot of the big authors. Yeah, for sure. So I was like, oh. And then when Flatiron Publishers started hearing like early buzz from like sales reps, et cetera, and bookstores, they were like, you know, maybe we should do a sequel. And I was like, yeah. I mean, I just immediately said yes without really giving it, you know, I just loved the characters and the settings, obviously so fun. I had a great time writing it. And I was like, sure. So by the time the first book came out, I actually was probably 70% done with the sequel already. So they were, and honestly, they had wanted it to be turned in. And I was like, I can't do it. I just couldn't finish. I wasn't there. And then the pandemic hit. And honestly, it threw everybody for a loop. We had no clue. It was very scary in the beginning couple months. Like you and I, you know, we didn't even know each other. And we like immediately bonded and were like, how are you doing? How's your mental health? It was scary. And so I just was like, I really went to the publishers. I'm like, is anyone going to want to read a book like this afterwards? It's like all these teenagers are having everything canceled in their lives, their graduations, their proms, everything. So then I was like, really, I was like, I want to stop writing. I'm not going to keep going. I'm going to wait for a little bit. Let's see what shakes out. So I waited for probably about 4 months. And then they were like, people really love your book as an escape in the pandemic. They're like, people are still buying books. It's really soapy and fun. We really think you should finish. And I was like, okay. And then I really threw out half of what I had written. I mean, I was like, I'm going to just completely redo it. Because, I mean, obviously it comes after the first book. And, I mean, we're not giving spoilers away. But, you know, Anna's in a very different place in her life then. And I kind of wanted to mirror a little bit with the seriousness of what was happening in the world, what was happening in her life, kind of. So I really took a different approach. But then, I don't know. It's so hard to be creative and to write in a pandemic. I tried so many different storylines for her story, like her journey in that book. And I kept starting and throwing them out. I knew she was going to go to Korea. Like I knew that was all going to stay, but I completely rewrote like her actual story that takes place in Korea. Like, I don't know, 2 or 3 times. I kept trying different ideas and I was like, oh, it's not working. And I've never had so many problems with like, and she's the main person too. So it was really, I was like, oh, I don't know. I will say, the one thing I learned is that I was a person who would always be like, oh, when I didn't like the sequel after loving the first book. And I would kind of be like, ah, so lame. I mean, how could they not understand how important it is if you have a great first book to have a great follow-up? And then now I know how hard it is. I will never say that again to any movie or TV show because I really was like cracking under the pressure of like people loving the first book. And I was like, what if I deliver a terrible second book? It was really, and I obviously did not have the plot point of the first book to go by. It was like completely made.
Well, that was kind of my next question, which is what happens when the source material dries up? Like, how do you approach, like your first book, you had 800 plus pages to kind of play around with as like what I can take. Like, and obviously it's not a word for word retelling. Like you definitely veer from the plot. You create, you know, it's not the 1800s in Russia. It's 2018 or whatever in New York City. Like, there's a different vibe. But when that dries up, where do you go to pull inspiration for this whole other story with these people? Like, there's no blueprint. There is no blueprint.
There was no blueprint. Let's just say that again. I had zero blueprint. I will say again, I was a little cocky about it. And I was like, oh my God, but the characters are so well developed. It's going to be super fun. I'm a TV writer. I'm used to like pitching story like continuously. I'm like, I'll figure it out. Because I am not really an outliner, which was my big, big mistake with this book. Because I was like, I'll just write it on the fly. And that didn't go well. I will outline. I'm promising myself and let it be, this will be the record. If there is a book 3, which I'm hoping there will be, but it's not for sure. I will outline that book. So like 100,000%. What I did is that I did know, because the first book ends pretty much at the end of a school year. Like it's not necessarily like it starts in February and ends like by May. It's a very condensed timeline. I was like, I want to see how rich kids party in the summer. Like, who doesn't want to see that? So I already,
of course,
I had that idea early. Like, I always knew I wanted to do like a summer book because I just thought it would be so fun. So I was like, and I was like, oh, well, I know how what rich kids do in the summer. They travel abroad. Like, everyone has money and they go places. That was a little tricky, though, because what I love about the first book, it's like so of the place. And then like you saw Valentine's Day from everyone's point of view all over the New York City and Greenwich. But here I was like the major holiday of, you know, the summer's 4th of July and she's in Korea. They don't care about 4th of July. So it was tricky for me to like figure out those things. And with like, and you know, another character goes to Los Angeles. So everyone's spread out. So I was like, oh, am I losing something by not having them all together? So anyway, it's one of those things where I'm like, it sounds like such a great idea. And then you're like, oh, this is very difficult to figure out how to pull off.
Right. Because it gets super tricky.
Right.
Like, I mean, I think that's the hard. I mean, I never think that sequels are easy. I think sequels seem so hard. I actually think that this sequel set all of us up for a really great third book. So I'm very hopeful that happens because I feel like that's what the sequel's job is like to bring some closure, but also to open up the door for the next thing. Yes. And I think that's really hard. And without giving any spoilers, like there was a lot you had to work through for the reader to get to a place that Anna could even have a more of a story.
Yes.
And I think that like that's the thing about adapting something like the original, which is very, it feels like the ending is very final. And like Tolstoy is like, I'm not actually going to write a sequel.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, I gave you 800 pages. Get out of my head. I hope that I'm not stepping out of line asking you about this. I think it's okay. But you and I, as we talked about, we've been messaging for the last year just about our own personal mental health and all this stuff. And one of the things I remember really distinctly and kind of giggling about it, but also being like, I hope she's okay, is that you really didn't like Anna Kay away at certain points.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you were really not happy with it or feeling very frustrated. And I think there was at least one time where you were like, I hate this book.
Yes. Oh.
So I'm curious if you talk about working through that, because I think you're happy with it now.
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Did you like it? Not to put you on the spot.
I did like it. I definitely, the thing that I missed about it, which is part of the story, is like I missed the fun. Because of things that happen in the book, we don't get to see that because people are dealing with other things. And so for me as a reader, I just missed the joy of the first book, especially a year into the pandemic, right? Like as a person, but I liked what you did. I liked how you tried to, like, there are definitely those moments. There's some scenes in Seoul that are so great. And then there are still, we get the parties, which I always loved. And like, there still is the drama, especially in the second half of the book.
Right.
But in the first half of the book, I struggled as a reader because I was like, I just want them to be rich and happy again.
I know. I mean, let me tell you, my editors.
That's not your fault. Right. Like, that's not a criticism of your work. It's actually probably a praise of your work. But as a reader, I was like, can we just like wear fancy clothes and like do drugs again and like make out?
Yeah.
Like, can I have a love story? Like, I miss the love, you know, like there's things that you miss. But again, that's not a fault of you. That's actually probably you staying true to your characters and what they're going through and me just being selfish.
No, it's totally completely legitimate because I was just like spiraling out about that. And my editors completely agree with you. And they were like, oh, the beginning of the book's like, it was way like sadder and mopier and whatever. And then they were like, oh, and I was like, but that's probably the true character arc or emotion. And they're like, yeah, but it's so not fun, which I get. And I understood that at the same time. We were texting during it. I had a terrible time with it. I mean, in terms of like writing books, I think this is my 8th book. Worst experience by far. Like I just was. I mean, obviously it's a global pandemic, so it's hard to separate it out, but I just couldn't figure it out. Like I had like logical problems about, again, like which I talked about, like time zone and everyone spread out. And it was really obviously Anna's story. I mean, she is the title character and I could not figure it out because I just didn't, you know, again, not giving spoilers. I didn't want to, it was hard to figure out what was the best story for her. That was what I really struggled with. I kept changing it over and over and I'd be like, it's just not right. And so we had to delay it. Honestly, the book was supposed to come out in March, I guess. And I just kept being like, it's not ready. I can't do it. And there were a couple times when I was like, I don't know, maybe I tell the publishers that I have to hold and like really rethink it for like a while. Like I just couldn't get it. it was really through the help of my husband, who, you know, because it was just the two of us trapped in this apartment for so long, for a year. Right. And like, he saw me struggling and whatnot. And he was such a great cheerleader. He kept being like, you can do this. Like, you can figure it out. Like, we can do it. We can talk it out as much as you want. Because I don't know, I just was never happy with it for a really long time. Even, I mean, I would turn it in with like dread, and then I'd be like, oh, and then I come up with a new idea and I'm like, maybe I'll do this. And then I would like write my editors. I'm like, they went through like quite a time with me too. It really was crazy. I finally, it was someone else through Instagram. It was another author who's a Flatiron author who wrote The Hazelwood, Melissa. She, I text her something and I said something about it because I know she did sequels. And she's like, I'm going to give you advice that it's not even my own advice. It's Marie Lu once told it to me, who wrote Warcross. She was like, all people want from a sequel is to hang out with the characters again. They just want to be with them. So they're not like as super focused on plot and everything that happens. Maybe you're putting too much pressure on yourself and just like have fun with the character. So that kind of unlocked and made me stop stressing out a little bit, because I was like, okay, that's true, right? These are, you know, that's what I'm hoping. So when that's what I did. And then in the end, we just slowly got it, hopefully better and better. And like, I was pretty satisfied with it by the end. So
that's so good. I love hearing about that, because I think oftentimes authors don't admit, at least to me or publicly, right, about hating or not liking or being disappointed in their work. And because, again, we were messaging sort of throughout about all sorts of things, about our lives, about our bodies, right, about our
everything,
our snacks,
how we're eating. Yes. Yes.
Yeah. So I just, I found that to be really fascinating. And when we decided to talk about this, I was like, I hope she'll talk about that.
I'm, as a TV writer and like who works in like comedy rooms, really, you have to just go there and just, you can ask me anything and I'll tell you the truth, okay, because that's where the good stories come from. I mean, it's that sort of honesty that makes, you know, anyone out there who wants to be a writer, it's not all like, woohoo, like the first book, amazing, like writing experience for me, loved every moment. This one, I was like, I don't know if I can do this, like for real.
Right. What do you find to be the difference for you creatively working in a writer's room with lots of people versus working with yourself? When you're writing a book, because I know, you know, in writer's rooms, it's a lot of conversation, it's a lot of ideas, it's a lot of back and forth, versus when you're stuck with yourself in your head in your apartment and maybe your husband helps here and there, like, how do you work? How does that work for you creatively?
I think the difference, like growing up, I mean, I've always knew I wanted to be a writer. I mean, that was always, always a dream. And it's still on the top of my bucket list is an adult fiction novel. Like that's still like, I'm like, that is my ultimate goal. And so I've always wanted to do that. But when I started writing books in the beginning, and my first couple books were like collections of like, you know, humor essays about my life, I found that very isolating, because I always worked through my 20s. I worked in marketing. I worked in PR. I worked in, you know, in like a book and advertising agency for book publishing, like lots of, I worked in book publishing too for a little while. I did a bunch of different things, and I love people. I'm very social, just like how you and I became friends on Instagram. Like, yeah. I'm very social. I'm chatty. I sort of need that. And I just found writing books a little bit like lonely and isolating. So when I finally moved out to LA in like 2007 and started writing for TV, I was like, oh my God, TV's great. It's like a group. It's like putting on a play. It's like a bunch of people, like, you know, on Shake It Up. I mean, as that example, since we already discussed it, it's like 100 people put that show on. Do you know what I mean? Concluding like 8 to 10 writers versus the entire crew. So it's like a very, it's like a group experience, which I love. But then there is this point in time when I started missing writing books again. And I, how I got back into it again, especially fiction, is that I had pitched for Disney Channel. They were like looking for a talking dog show. And I am obsessed with dogs. I've always been my dog. And I was like, oh my God, this was when they were going to do Dog with a Blog, which is the show that came out. And that was in development. But how development works, it's like a year and they don't know. And testing showed that kids want a talking dog show. And so I was like, I'll do it. I'll do it. So I just threw my hat in the ring on a something like that. They like listened to pitches from so many writers. And I came up with a whole idea and storyline and I pitched it and I didn't get the job. And I was like, okay, but I figured out this whole thing. You know, I figured out these characters and I kind of loved it. And I was like, maybe I should write a kid's book. And like, I never even thought about it because, you know, it was like basically a boy, you know, who was like in elementary, I mean, in like fifth grade or something. And so then I just started writing it. I was like, you know what? I'm going to try it. I'm just going to, why not? And so I was getting up every morning before Shake It Up at like 5:30. And I was like, I'm going to write 10 pages a day. Not even if I didn't do it, it's fine. And I had a friend who I would email it to, and she didn't even read it. I'm like, don't read it. But it was just gave me like a marker, right. like, and set me on a goal. And soon I had, like, I don't know, 60 or 70 pages. And then I submit it to my book agent. And they're like, oh, she's like, finish it. I love it. It's super fun. And it really, writing, even writing for Shake It Up, very gratifying. All those, you know, we had a live studio audience. Those teens loved that show. Like, you can't believe the passion. Do you know what I mean? So I found it very rewarding as a writer. So ultimately, before Anna Kay, writing Elvis and the Underdogs, which is a middle grade book, kind of for like third to the fifth grade set, really was such a great experience. Like, my book tour for that was amazing. I met my husband through my book tour for that book and whatnot. So it was like absolutely this amazing experience. And so now I think I've figured out a balance to do both, because I really do want to do both. The freedom, getting back to your original question. In book writing, yes, you have so much more freedom to do kind of what you want to do. You have to think of TV as like a series of hoops, basically, which is how I think about it. Every step of the game, you have to, like, there are production producers that you have to get their notes on. You have to usually do a lot of their notes. You then it goes to a studio. You get all of these people's notes. You have to then, like, take that into consideration. Then it goes up to a network or whoever's streaming it. You get their notes. So there's so many levels of checks and balances and so many people being like, we think it's this and that, and you do not get free reign at all. Even if you're the creator and showrunner. I mean, you do if you become like a super, like Shonda Rhimes, you know, then you can do whatever you want. But the rest of us don't have that freedom. So it's a nice balance, because I like, again, like, I get a lot from the TV writing aspect of my life, but I get, you know, now I get a lot from the book writing too, because it's like, ooh, this is mine.
Right. With the hoops in, are there hoops in book writing? Like, what is it like when you submit it to your editor? How much pushback do they get, or the publisher, like the bigger publisher on your work?
With your first book, when you're first selling a book, like with Anna Kay, you have to write the entire manuscript first, and that goes out on submission everywhere. So then, because I was lucky enough to have a lot of publishers interested in it, I didn't get much pushback at all. Like, you get to go through this period where you get to talk to different editing houses and they're pitching you on why you should pick them. I did get pushback though with Anna Kay, and a couple publishers for in their young adult division said, you're gonna have to tone down the sex and drugs, like, it's just like FYI. And I was like, okay. And that helped me make my decision, because I didn't want to. I mean, it was really, I really was very, again, I wasn't setting out to write a young adult novel. I was setting out to write a novel, but then they happened to be teenagers, so I knew it would be young adult. But I was in no way catering to what I thought was a young adult audience, because I was like, what is that? I mean, in my time, when I was a teenager, we read everything, and it wasn't, you know, things with teenagers isn't considered young adult, like Catcher in the Rye or To Kill a Mockingbird. They would be young adult novels if they came out right now. Which is,
I
like,
know, that's so weird.
Isn't that
about.
Odd? Totally.
I know. Every time I have a young adult author on, we always end up going into this conversation about, like, what even is young adult? This didn't even exist when we were kids. But that's one of my other questions for you, is, like, I know people felt some type of way about your book portraying kids, like, doing bad shit or whatever, like drugs and sex and, like, being rich and, like, being unlikable, which, you know, if you ask me, those my favorite parts of the book are kids being young and rich and unlikable and having sex and, you know,
making mistakes. That's the whole point of, I feel like, youth. Right.
Right. Exactly. And, like, that's true to, I mean, I wasn't doing all the things that those kids were doing in their books, but I definitely knew people who were doing those things, you know.
Absolutely.
Like, I wasn't quite that much of a rebel. Everyone knows I like to follow the rules, but I had friends who were, you know, I had friends that my brother would call fast ass broad and, like, all these things. So I'm wondering, like, did you ever have to respond to that pushback, like, from readers, or were you just like, you don't know kids? Like, how do you deal with that?
I got the most pushback probably that I noticed or in comments on Instagram. Because, look, my whole thing about reviews, like it, don't like it, there's so many books that everyone loves that I was like, eh. You know, so honestly, I was like, that's the whole point that's so great about reading. It's like personal choice. It either worked for you or it didn't, for whatever reason. So I have no issue with bad reviews or people like, meh, or I put it down or I didn't finish. I got a lot of, like, people, I would think moms being like, I do not recognize teenagers like this. And I was like, okay, well, I want to tell you something. Teenagers lie their ass off. Like, every kid lies. I'm sorry. You even just lie when you don't have to lie, because you just are practicing. I don't know what it is. You're just like, so I was like, you don't know. Cause I have a couple of friends who, you know, are wealthy and live in New York City, and they have teenager kids, and they're like, oh, well, I don't think there's this amount of, and I was like, I promise you, you are wrong. And I did research too, like for sure, because I definitely have, I have friends who have teenagers now, and they absolutely are like, oh yeah, I've definitely seen coke at party. You know, I've seen coke at parties, I've seen drugs. I mean, they're not going to admit that much to their, that it was them, to their parents, as I'm their mom's friend, but it's out there. Like I also went to, I went to 1 year of boarding school at St. George's in Newport, Rhode Island. And it was an incredible amount of rich kids. Like, you can't believe it. And let me tell you, they, like, live fast. I think when you are born into extreme wealth, and I was not at all, you do have a level of sophistication and worldliness because you get to travel more and go places, and their parents have, like, multiple houses. You just probably see more things, I would think. So maybe they are a little bit more sophisticated, especially growing up in New York City, because I arrived in New York at 18 for NYU. So I was a teenager there, and I was like, seeing teenagers your own age, like dressed in Chanel and driving fancy cars, it's just like otherworldly, the amount, the level of what kind of money there is in New York City. Because I grew up in Tennessee, and there's not, even the richest person in town doesn't have like New York City money. You know what I mean?
Right.
So it's like level.
Did we talk about, I went to NYU too. Have we talked about that?
Oh, no, we haven't.
Yeah. I went to NYU too. And I had one of my roommates, junior year, he is from New Jersey, but his family is very wealthy. And I remember he once had a sweater on that he told me how much it cost. And I was like, we're 20. Like, I was literally like, how do you have a $2,000 sweater on?
Totally. I mean, you
what
can't
is a
even
2000? I was like, what is different about your sweater than this sweater that I'm wearing from Urban Outfitters?
Right.
Like, they're the same, except for yours is from Barney's.
Right.
And costs 10, 15 of my sweaters or whatever. More than that, I'm bad at math. Okay, this is my last sort of Anna Kay question, okay, which is, do you have any vision of ever adapting another classic? And if so, which one or ones?
Yes and no. Well, it's weird because, again, with Anna Kay, it wasn't like, I didn't know it was a thing. I didn't know that so many people do that, that everyone like does, loves. I mean, I knew obviously about Shakespeare and Jane Austen. Like, everybody knows that people adapt right. those books. But I had no idea that so many were being adapted, and especially in young adult literature. So my agent did absolutely say, what are you going to do next? Which adaptation? I was like, I don't know. And I was trying to think about it a little bit because I was like, oh, I do kind of like The Count of Monte Cristo, but I feel like that's been done a bunch too because I like revenge tales because I was like, ooh, I like dark and I feel like that would be super fun and teen version. There is a D.H. Lawrence book that I remember reading in college called Women in Love, and I was thinking about doing that as well because I was like, oh, it's two sisters. And this is me, and I've been meaning to reread it and I haven't yet. It's two sisters, and one was became artsy. They're both married. They both got married, and one was like artsy and free spirited. And maybe they were like polyamorous in that time, you know, of their lives. And they were artists and they were bohemian and didn't have kids and partied a lot. And the other was like the traditional, got married to a nice man and had children. And it was like, I have always been obsessed with like the two lives, your path, you know, the two paths your life could go, because I don't have children. So I have a very different life from a lot of my friends that do. You know, so I just always am like, ooh, the two versions and two sisters. I thought that would be a fun one to do. I'm not sure. I mean, part of me is like, is it a good thing? And I'm going to ask this to you. Like, I was like, oh, I'm retelling these like white men stories. In a way, I kind of like that idea because I really, with Anna Kay and Anna Kobe, I'm like, these girls are going to lead. They are going to have voices. They are not going to be like, you know, seen through a different lens. So I want to have them like do what they want to do and then just make it a little bit more modern. But I'm not sure. So, I mean, so I know it's a vague answer, but I'm like, if it has to be a book that I know that I love. I don't think I'm the type of person that can just pick something and be like, ooh, this would make a good adaptation. Like, and you know, and then just do it for that sake. Cause right now I have so little time to like write books on the side, you know, of my regular day job. So it's got to be something I'm like obsessed with. Like that's, I work best when I'm obsessed with like one story and an idea and I can do it, because otherwise it's not going to work for me.
Right. I said that was my last question about Anna Kay, but then you reminded me that I had a really important question that I wanted to ask you about, which is one of the things that when Anna Kay came out is that it was sort of marketed as Gossip Girl meets Crazy Rich Asians. And I had a lot of feelings about that. I'm not Asian and you are. And I don't feel like that was a fair assessment, because I feel like, first of all, Anna and her brother are half Asian.
Right.
And they're really the only Asian characters in the book. And I sort of felt like it was like a way to pigeonhole you because you are Korean also. Right. And like, I'm wondering if you had feelings about that at all. And if you didn't, that's fine too. I just did because I have feelings about everything. But, but I found it to be interesting because yes, they're rich, but it's, I don't know. I didn't get Crazy Rich Asian vibes besides rich people, but I don't know.
I think that is like just the categorization that people use right now for anything that's like Asian and a little bit like fancy. They're like Crazy Rich Asians because I'm telling you that every single, it was everywhere. Like that is the only way my book was described. Gossip Girl, I am fine. I like that. Like that's,
I mean,
definitely
it is
a
very
comp,
Gossip Girl.
For
totally.
Sure. So I absolutely think that one is accurate too. Because I was thinking like Cruel Intentions, you know what I mean?
Sure.
Like Dangerous Liaisons, that was kind of a thing. But I think with the Asian thing, I think that's the one thing they just throw onto it for good or for bad. Because in some ways, I definitely drafted off the success of Crazy Rich Asians because I sold this book the September, like it went out September 5th, which was like Crazy Rich Asians came out like August 15th and had like blockbuster 2 week box office out of nowhere. No one expected it to be a hit like it was. Right. And then it took off. So it's tricky because I have a lot of, I mean, I have lots of feels about that as well, you know, about like how you categorize like diverse works and whatnot, because even in my TV work it turns into like Crazy Rich Asians, Crazy Rich, and I'm like, well, or people are like, oh, have you watched Bling Empire? And I'm like, I didn't or I haven't, but it's like, it's just they pick that one comparison of one Asian thing they know and they just put it on there and they just mash it up and say it's accurate. But it's I agree with you, I wouldn't necessarily think that Anna Kay is like Crazy Rich Asians-esque, except for the fact that, like, you know, I read the books of Crazy Rich Asians, and they're very soapy. And I, for sure, you know how serious Anna Karenina, the original, is. Yeah. I definitely made a point. I'm like, I am not trying to rewrite Tolstoy. This is not high art. This is, my book will not be literature, you know, basically, and study for 100 years. I want fun, soapy, like, it needs to be a different version. I need to make it my own thing. And I wanted to write something that I wanted to read. So I wanted to be serious, but I wanted to come through in like fun ways. Do you know what I mean? Like, with the characters, etc. So,
I mean, the only reason I say that is also because, like, besides Anna and her brother, there's like a pretty diverse cast of characters. Yes. Like Dustin is he's mixed.
He's mixed, black. Jewish and black. Yep.
Like me.
Yes.
And I feel like there's like lots of white. It's more diverse than either Crazy Rich Asians or Gossip Girl, for being completely honest.
Right.
And maybe that model doesn't really exist and like you're creating something new. But I just was curious about that. Okay. We're going to take a quick break and then we'll be right back. You all hear me talk about Libro FM almost every single week because I love them. They offer great selections on audiobooks, and every purchase you make goes towards supporting an independent bookstore of your choosing, which is a very, very, very obvious win-win in my opinion. Libro FM always keeps it fun and fresh by featuring a variety of audiobooks from bestsellers and new releases to recommendations from your favorite authors. They even let me make my own playlist of some of my most favorite audiobooks, so you can check that out too. Plus, if you're new to Libro FM, you can get two audiobooks for the price of one when you use the code THESTACKS, all one word, at checkout. So head to Libro.fm and use the code THESTACKS at checkout to get two audiobooks for the price of one. Your favorite bookseller will thank you. Okay, so the thing that we always do on the show is called Ask the Stacks, and I have not prepped you for this, so this is my surprise. Someone has written in asking us for a book recommendation, so I'm going to read what they wrote, and then you're going to give me just at least one, but you could do multiple titles of books that you think they might like. So this comes from Abby W., and Abby says, as I'm sure is true for many people, the pandemic has made me feel quite isolated and lonely. While I'm thankful to be healthy and to live with my partner, I don't live near my family or any close friends, and it's just taken a bit of a toll on my mental health lately. I'm seeking a book that makes me feel a sense of connection and belonging and or helps me feel more grounded in who I am. I love books that feel like a punch in the gut and that make me think long and hard about life. And then here are some books that Abby says that she liked. And I did not plant this. She says she liked Anna Kay.
Okay.
Cast by Isabel Wilkerson. Maybe You Should Talk to Someone by Lori Gottlieb. Tiny Beautiful Things by Cheryl Strayed. Such a Fun Age by Kylie Reed. And a bunch more. So I'll go first and I'll give her three recommendations so you have time to think.
Okay.
Abby, you presented me a lot of different books, so I kind of am giving you a range. The first one, which really goes deep into the gut punch, is A Little Life by Hanya Yanagihara. That one is maybe not going to help you if you're feeling on the depressed side, but if you're looking for a book that's going to make you feel connected to characters and make you feel a gut punch, this is the one for you. It is very sad, I'm just warning you, but it's also long. So if you're looking for something to kind of live in, this is a good one. My second one is a book that a lot of people know that I love. It's an essay collection called The Reckonings by Lacey M. Johnson. These essays are all about justice and joy. They're about the ways that we can find justice in life. So some essays are about children with cancer. Some essays are about Hurricane Harvey, as Lacey is from Houston. It's one of my favorite essay collections. And this is sort of leaning into a sense of connection and feeling like our obligations to one another. And then my last option is a super backlist book. I don't think I've ever talked about it on here, but I loved it. It's called My Own Country by Abraham Verghese, and he wrote Cutting for Stone, and it's his memoir about his life in his post. So he was as a doctor in med school. After med school, you go and you do your residency, and he went to rural, I believe, Tennessee, but I'm not positive.
Yes.
Right at the start of the AIDS pandemic, and he was an infectious disease doctor. So he was dealing with people who were not in New York City, not in LA, not in San Francisco, many of whom were not homosexual at the beginning of the AIDS crisis, who had AIDS. And he was dealing with being a brown person. He's Southeast Asian. He was dealing with the racism and the confusion and the fact that, you know, heterosexual women who were married were coming down with AIDS, and like, what is that? And what's wrong with me? And what does this look like? And it's just a very interesting book that will certainly make you think long and hard about life. So those are my recs. Jenny, what do you have for Abby?
One quick thing about Abraham Verghese. I worked for Mary Evans, his literary agent, when that book sold. And
oh, really?
I had talked to him on the phone. Yeah, he's such a great guy, so smart and interesting. And I mean, that was all I wanted to
say. And he also wrote
really
Cutting for
say.
Stone, which also is a good recommendation too. Another great book.
Let's see. For my recommendations, one of the books that this is definitely an old book, and I don't know if you're into short stories, but I am a big short story person. And one thing I was thinking, given that you're like, oh, I want this connection. Some short story collections, you know, it's like reading a bunch of stories of slices of life. So it's like, oh, maybe that would be like, you know, restorative for you. There is a collection called Come to Me by Amy Bloom that came out in the 90s that I read in college. I reread it, I don't know, every couple years. It is brilliant. It was nominated for like the Pulitzer Prize or the National Book Award, which is very rare for a collection of short stories. But there's a couple interconnected short stories in there. So I feel like that would be a good one. Jennifer Egan, Welcome to the Goon Squad. I just thought that was such a social sort of book, and it kind of reminds me of, like, you know, some friends bopping around. And that's, I think, also kind of a weird collection, but of connected character short stories. And I just liked that in the sense that there was a lot of the stuff in LA about, like, bopping around a nightclub. So I feel like you want escapism during this time, that maybe that might be a fun one.
Those are good.
Yeah. How about
those
that?
Those are great.
Is that good?
Those
okay,
are great.
Good.
Anyone looking for a book recommendation, email askthestacks@thestackspodcast.com. Now, Jenny, it's time for the Stacks questionnaire. We always start here. Two books you love, one book you hate.
I know you gave – I just want everyone to know Tracy sent this to me this morning. So she was like, oops, sorry. And I was like – and I scanned it really quickly. And I was like, it's pandemic brain. I'm telling you, pandemic brain is like so real and like – whatnot. I can no longer multitask very well. Two books I love. Lori Moore is probably my favorite author. She is a big short story writer. There's a book, her first collection is called, oh my gosh, I'm blinking. It's Self-Help, I believe. And I read it in college, and there's a book, and it's all written in second person, meaning like you do this, and then it's like how to have an affair. And it's like, it's hilarious. She has such a skewed, like edgy point of view, and I was like, oh my god, it's so amazing. I remember feeling kind of like alone in college and whatnot, being like, she gets me, I would get her, we could be friends. It was one of those sort of things, like I like how she sees the world. So I would recommend Lori Moore, short story wise. Another book I love, I'm obsessed sort of with Sally Rooney right now, I gotta tell you, because I'm rereading Normal People, the scripts, basically, because they published that book, and I really thought Conversations with Friends was like amazingly good for a first novel, because I'm always fascinated about people's first novel, because I still want to write my adult fiction first novel.
Right, right.
And I would remember I was on a plane reading the Beyoncé issue of Vogue, and there's a huge article about her, and I knew nothing about her. And they were like, she's the Salinger of Snapchat. And I was like, ew, gross. Like, I was like...
also, like, what does that mean?
I know. I was like, it's so, like, demeaning to her, and I hadn't even read her book yet. It was just, like, an odd sort of thing, because she was so young when she wrote this book. But when I read it, I mean, of course, I honestly probably... could have ordered it then if I had Wi-Fi on the plane. I was like obsessed. I was like, I need to check this book out that everyone's like talking about. And it was great. I was just found it very refreshing. Like of the, that her young people that it's again, you know, like if they were like high school age up going up into college, they just seem like real people. And it wasn't like young adult-ish or where they're trying to be like cutesy and love and whatnot. They just kind of like knocked around life and had issues and like grown up problems. And they just seemed like, they were just such great characters. I just found it very surprising and interesting. So I became like a big fan of Sally Rooney.
Okay. And what about the book you hate?
Oh my gosh, I'm trying to think of the book I hate.
I'm really impressed that you're having a hard time thinking of it because I can think of like 50 books I hate off the top of my head at all
really?
Times.
Give me some books.
Book.
Like, tell me.
Well, I mean, I hate Catcher in the Rye. I hate Great Gatsby, but I want to go back and reread it because apparently there's this whole theory that that Great Gatsby was black. And so then that really made me think about wanting to reread it because then there's this whole thing about like trying to pass and like be, you know, that I'm like, right. Oh, I might actually want to read that because maybe that's good.
Right.
So I hate that. I also like, I hate like every novel that's ever been written pretty much. I don't really like novels that much.
Oh, really?
No, not really. I didn't like To Kill a Mockingbird. I don't like most of the classics. I hate The Awakening. Was that by the Chopin sisters or whatever? No.
Edna,
the character's name is Edna. We had to read that in high school. I hated that. I don't know. I just hate everything. I think everything is like, too much description, not enough plot, too much emotion, not enough like action. I find when people write about feeling, it's really cheapened. I feel like if you just write about the things, let the reader put that other part in. Like, I don't need to know how, like, I don't like to read about feelings.
Okay.
I think I can add that myself as a human who thinks and feels.
I guess when you're talking about classics, oh boy, everyone's supposed to love Faulkner as I lay dying. I remember I had to read it for school. I could not get through it. And I was like, oh my God, if this is what it's like to be, I was like, die already. I sort of remember that sort of aspect because it was just very stream of conscious. And I think at the time, honestly, it was probably too, I mean, I maybe should give it another chance. But at the time I was just like, not into it. It just didn't, I couldn't connect with it at all. Same thing with like all those male Bastion, her, you know, Moby Dick and stuff. I was like, oh my God, I have no interest in this, you know, type of thing. But one of the classics, I took a class in college called Doris Lessing and George Eliot, who is a woman, but who was picked a name to write under like a male name basically. And I really like The Mill on the Floss is like the big one that everyone reads of her, but I like, oh no, Middlemarch is the one that everyone liked it, but I like Mill on the Floss because it's like a family story and stuff.
Did I answer a question? That counts. Totally counts.
Thank you. Thanks. Yeah. I'm glad.
Whatever. Yeah, you're done. You passed the test. Okay.
Yay.
Thanks. Have a nice day. No, just kidding. Okay. What's the last really just great book you've read?
When I'm writing a book, which I was honestly, I mean, the last edits of Anna Kay Away went in January. So FYI, it's coming out. It was that fast. I was tweaking till the end. I don't read that much except for like things. I definitely don't read YA. I don't read whatever I'm working in. Maybe I'll read like a thriller here and there or like some sort of genre thing. I just don't have the time or my brain. I just like pass out and basically go to sleep. So I usually read at night. I have to say, I read Anxious People by Frederick Bachman, who wrote The Man Called Ove. I was like, I'm not sure. I never read A Man Called Ove. I think I bought it on my Kindle, but I never read it. And I was like, all right, I'm going to check this book out because of Anxious People and whatnot. And I will say, I found it, I'm going to say this is what I would recommend now because I was really surprised as a writer reading this book in the beginning. It just sort of seems like, not light, but just like, oh, it's just a bunch of cast of characters who kind of show up at this open house and they all kind of get pulled in together. And I was reading it on the treadmill as I was walking to make myself do it every day. And he brings you in deeper and deeper into these people's lives in a way that just kind of crept up on me. And I started crying on the treadmill. I might have been a PMSing too. I will admit that. But somewhere towards the end, it was also the pandemic and talking about connection and the goodness, finding the goodness in strangers, which I'm a big believer in the kindness of strangers from Tennessee Williams, that like, I don't know, I was very moved and I was like, oh my God, and I'm not the girl who's like, cries that often, honestly, especially right. in books lately. And I have to say, I was like, kind of like really moved to tears from that. So I was like, wow, this is, I don't know. Cause in general, it's not a book I would have ever really normally picked up. I just kind of like,
Don't you love that when a book that you're not expecting really like nails it
totally.
For you?
Yes.
It's the best because I also hate having expectations. And so because they're never met, I have very high expectations, rarely met. But when I have no expectations and then a book just like blows my mind, like that's how I felt about Anna Kay. Like I was like, I have very low expectations. This is not my thing. And then I read it and I have not stopped talking about it pretty much for the last year and change. Right. Like I just was like, this is so great. This is like such a treat. And I, you know, like emotions and all those things. But what are you reading right now?
What am I reading right now? It's funny. I was like, I bet she's going to ask this. I'm going to pull like a couple books that like are on my nightstand. I'm reading that Sanjay Gupta, like, is it How to Improve Your Brain? It's the brain book.
Yeah.
Whatever. So I'm reading that.
I'll link everything in the show notes with the title. So if you're like, what is she talking about? It'll be there, people. Don't worry.
I'm not a big nonfiction reader. I just don't read that much nonfiction in general because I was like, life's too short. I have stacks and stacks of books, speaking of the stacks, all over my house because I always buy books that I like want to read and I just don't have enough time. I heard him on a podcast and I was like, he sounds smart. And my brother's an MD, PhD, and he just weirdly reminded me of my brother about how he's so logical, but like accessible. And I was like, boom. So I started reading that because I was worried about my brain in the pandemic turning to mush. I said I was reading The Normal People scripts, but that's for like my TV work. And I just thought that show was phenomenal. I am reading How to Speak K-pop for a project is research.
Ooh.
Honestly, I did a lot of research for Anna Kay in the Korean part because honestly, I went to Korea when I was 8. I haven't been 8 for many, many, many decades, basically, I feel like. So honestly, I did not. I really had to do a huge amount of research for that book because I want it to be like modern Korea now, not from the stories that I heard.
Right.
And the top of my book read that I think I might be able to start today is that book Legendborn, because I brought that up to you. It's a young adult book that's been getting, I just keep hearing a lot of buzz about it. And everyone's like, oh my God, Legendborn's so good. So that's like kind of like the list. Because I am on a kick right now because I want to read more diverse authors. And I mean, because when all of, you know, I'm obviously diverse, but I was looking through my bookshelves and I made the recollection that even though I do certainly read diverse authors like They're There by Tommy Orange, I mean, I'd certainly seek it out. But I mean, obviously the dominant amount of books that I have, and we have like, I don't know, 2,000 or 3,000 books in this house. My husband's a huge reader. We, a lot of white people. I was like, I want to change that. So I'm really on a kick of buying.
I also feel like it's a lot harder to read like a diverse range of authors because publishing publishes so many books by white people.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
Like it's like I the opposite of you. I love nonfiction, and so much nonfiction that's not memoir is written by white men. And so every year, you know, I track all my reading and I keep track of what I'm reading. I'm not always disappointed because I've read so many books by white men. And then I'm like, right, but I also read, you know, investigative journalism. Right. Nonfiction, and like that is who has those jobs, you know? And so
it's true.
I try, like, if there's a book by a black woman that is in that vein, I try to read it, you know? Right. Like, I've read plenty, but like, I'm reading a book about mass shootings right now, and it's written by this white guy from Texas, and I'm like, ugh, but also, like, I'm curious. So, you know, like, I get it. What are some books that you're looking forward to reading?
Usually, I'm very good with keeping super track of like what movies are coming out, what books are coming out. Speaking of Sally Rooney and my current obsession, she has a new book coming out from the fall. I'm like, what is this woman doing? Because she worked on TV show. She were on the TV show. They're adapting Conversations with Friends now with Taylor Swift's boyfriend, Joe Alwyn is going to be in it. And
I don't know who that is.
Oh, it's Taylor Swift's boyfriend that everyone's like, they're secretly engaged. I follow a lot of teen gossip FYI.
I see. So this is not my beat.
Yeah, you're like, don't know about who that
Taylor
is.
Taylor Swift is actively not my beat.
Oh, okay. So I'm waiting for that book. It's like the book that I'll like ask for a galley from my book agent because I try not to bother her about such things. I'm like, can you get me an early copy of this? What is another book I'm looking forward to coming out? I know all the big books come out in like summer and September. I couldn't really tell you what's coming out.
It's okay.
I don't know.
That's fine. That's fine. It could be something that you've had on your bookshelves too. Like just something that you just keep wanting, like something that you've been meaning to read.
I when we talk about books I hate, I kind of like to hate read like when celebrities write novels. Do you know what I mean? Like Ethan Hawke had a new book and I read his first one and I was in working in book publishing and he, when his first novel came out and he read, I did a reading series with my best friend on Avenue A in New York City at the Limbo Cafe. And like he came in, everybody should, it was like just packed a thing. And I was like, meh. I don't know why. If ever there's something I hate read, it's always that. Cause I have David Duchovny's book who I do like in some of his work. And I was like, who? And everyone, and I've known that he keeps trying to write novels and that he's very serious about it. And I heard he's very smart, but I'm still always a little skeptical about people like that. But then I read an article about this one that said he's getting better. So I was like, good for him that he's actually trying.
Like trying.
Yeah, he's actually really takes this very seriously. So I was like, all right. So I have that book that it's like, I'm kind of like, I have curiosity about things like that sometimes. Okay. I always read first novels. Like I love people's first attempt because it's like, hey, kudos to you for writing an adult fiction novel, for sure.
Do you have any favorite first novels besides Conversation with Friends?
The Secret History, I guess, by Donna Tartt was like, I was like, oh my God, it's a first novel. I think she wrote in 8 years, so that makes me feel better.
Okay.
I grew up in the time of Bret Easton Ellis and Jay McInerney. You know, that 80s, 90s, New York City, lots of coke and drugs and name dropping of designers and stuff. So I really love Less Than Zero because I really like the movie and I loved his first novel too. And then Tom Ajanowicz was in that thing too, like Slaves of New York. So anything that was that, because I do think I got a little bit of flack for all my designer name dropping in Anna Kay. And I was like trying to think where that came from. And I was like, oh, I bet it kind of came from like Bret Easton Ellis because all of his books like American Psycho are just all labels and whatnot. And I guess I just recognize that stuff. And so maybe I don't know for sure. That's where, I mean, I'm assuming that's where I wasn't really thinking about it. Cause I was like, oh, don't people want to know what rich kids are wearing? Cause I do. Yes,
I certainly do. I just think those people don't care about rich kids. Like, I just think like they're just not interested in rich people. And like, that's fine too. I am interested.
Yeah.
please tell me what they're wearing, where they're eating. Like, I need the details, please. Let's see. So you said you have like 2,000 to 3,000 books in your house. How do you all organize your books or do you?
We absolutely organize our books. My husband does that. He is far more organized than I am. When he moved in, I already had these crazy bookshelves. It's my favorite piece of furniture, these restoration hardware. They're like 9 feet long. It's three like library shelves, steel books where you stand on a ledge. There's no ladder. I wanted the ladder, like the Beauty and the Beast ladder, but it doesn't have that. But you can like have to step on a thing to reach the high shelves.
Oh my gosh.
All my books were just not in any order at all. And he was like, I cannot believe you're like living like a library animal. Like you read, but you're like not fully formed. Like, what is this? How can you find anything? And I'm like, you know? So now he does it by, section. Like there's like the short story section. There's like graphic novel. There's a whole young adult section. There is like his sort of shelf of favorite book. My shelf, it's all like all male and then mine is like all female. It's sort of funny. And he kind of arranges that way, but he kind of displays books and faces them out like it's basically a bookstore. And he will periodically like move things around. So the only problem with that is I'm like, I have to ask him when I can't find a book. I'm like, I know I have this book. I don't know what section it is.
I don't know.
Can you make a card catalog? Yes. That's how it's arranged.
Are there any books that you're embarrassed about never having read?
I mean, in terms of Tolstoy, I've never read War and Peace. I tried a couple times and I could not get through it. Because when I first started thinking about Anna writing the sequel, I was like, should I base it on another book by Tolstoy or someone else and follow that model? I was like, would that be interesting or would that be like cheaty weird? So I really went through the gauntlet trying to figure out like what the best way to structure it. So I'd never read War and Peace. And I keep thinking, and then I saw I think the Comet of something, that Broadway musical with Josh Groban was based on that. I didn't like that musical. So I was like, oh, okay. So now maybe it's the story.
It's not for you.
Yeah, exactly. Other classics. They'd probably all be in that classic sort of thing.
Yeah.
Because I think I would just start some of these. I'm like, meh, not into it.
What about a book that you're proud to have read?
When I was working in book publishing, Infinite Jest came out, that David Foster Wallace, a thousand million page book. I went to the book party because it was like I was an assistant and we had a chance to like go, and they gave out these galleys of the book that were signed by him that are now honestly worth like $2,000. I carry that book with me forever, never read it. Like, oh, every boy in their 20s in New York City was carrying that book around. I'm like, they're not reading that book. No one I know has read that book yet at all. I meet my husband in 2014. Lo and behold, it's one of his favorite books. And I'm like, so you read it? And he's like, I've read it twice. And I'm like, what? Shut the fuck up. Get the hell out of here. But then when we started falling in love, I'm like, oh, it's his one of his favorite books. I guess I have to read it. But I was, you know, that thing where you're nervous and you're in a new relationship. Right. I'm like, what if I hate his favorite book? Because reading's such a big deal to me. So I was like, oh, I guess I'll start it. So many characters, so many things. I'm like, yes, do I get why David Foster Wallace, that so many people like love him and obsess and is very different. And I don't know if he's an experimental writer, but you know, there's just like a bastion of men usually who just love him. So I really tried to give it my all. And honestly, it took me like 255 pages before it kind of started taking off for me. It was such a like, so many characters, it's some crazy stuff that happens in that book. But then ultimately I did end up understanding why he liked it and appreciated it for sure. So I am very proud. It's 1,079 pages and I have read it. For real.
Good for you. That's impressive. I feel like a lot of people by the end of this month, May, are going to feel very proud to have read Anna Karenina. Yeah. I feel proud that I finally finished it. And it's my first and probably only Russian novel. At least the classic. Like maybe I'd read like Nabokov or whatever. Right. But like, I don't know. Not rushing to it. Okay. If you were teaching in high school, what's a book you would assign?
I honestly would assign a collection of short stories. I don't know. I just think that I got the most out of these slices of life. And it really, when I think about why I love short stories so much versus novels, because it's like, you know, it's a small thing and it's a slice of life. So you have less expectations, but the best ones are the ones you're like, oh my God, they managed to fully develop like these incredible characters in like 8 pages, but then it's done. And I feel like I have read so many different collections of them that I really kind of have a very expansive worldview. To me, I'm like, if more people read books, it would really help the world, basically. I just think kids should read more, and like all different types of books from all different perspectives and slices of lives of all different characters. I really think that would help, because I think people get stuck in genres or types and that's all they read, and they're all kind of a little bit sort of the same. So maybe I think I would do a lot of short stories, just because I think that, you know, writers who are great at them really like do a random assortment of characters and they like discuss one theme. So I think it's very easy to like pinpoint and like talk about one particular story.
Have you read Danielle Evans' short stories collection? Her newest one was The Office of Historical Corrections.
No, I haven't.
I think you should read it. It's really good.
Okay, I will. All right, awesome.
I'm not a huge short story person, but I think the collection's really, I think it's really cool and good. We did it on the show, so I have lots of feelings about it, but I
get it immediately. yeah, definitely.
It's like 7 short stories and 1 novella. So like the last 100 pages is like a novella. And then the first part is a bunch of short stories. Okay. I'm going to ask you 2 more questions and then we're going to be all done. And this is, I'm only asking you this because this is sort of your wheelhouse, but what's a book that you would like to see, or maybe you would like to adapt into a television show or film?
I have an idea that I've been sort of working on that I was like, oh, would this be a movie, or is this like, because I do that thing where I try it in different little genres. Cause I was like, maybe it's a short story. The Picture of a Modern, and this also would work for your earlier question. The Picture of Dorian Gray, I always thought was so fun. And I was like, ooh, a teen, but I would totally flip the gender and make it female. I was like, I would make her Dory Gray basically and do it as a girl instead. So I thought that would be fun. Yeah.
That's good. Okay. Last one. If you could require the current president of the United States of America to read one book, what would it be?
I personally, like, I went through a media blackout right after Biden's inauguration in January. And I was like, okay, I just want to go back to like not reading or caring that much about politics anymore, because we got you know who out, the unmentionable that I can't even discuss. And this is like the new charge. I think in my opinion now is like Joe Biden's so busy. I would want him to read like a fun book to like, honestly, I know, is that crazy that I'm not being like, you should read this book and learn about people. I would think he should read a beach read, because I am impressed. I like that he's getting so many people vaccinated. I'm very much like he is a busy, he has inherited a job that was lying in ruins. So I feel like I would suggest a fun beach read, escapism. Do I have to name the book? I do have to name the book.
You don't have to name a book. I feel like that's fine. I think that's fine. Just something nice for Joe to relax.
Yeah.
Joe and Jill can just hang out on the beach in Delaware or wherever they like to go to hang out.
Yeah, with their dogs and stuff. Totally. Yeah.
Major needs a break. Major's having a tough time adapting, I think. Or Champ. I don't know which one.
It's like Champ and Major. One book, one of my favorite dog books is The Monks of Newskeet. They are these monks that live in upstate New York. It's a dog training book. And they have
Is this like How to Raise a Puppy?
Yes.
Okay.
But no,
this is
crazy.
It's
How to Raise a Dog. Oh, tell me.
So my guest last month, my April guest is Reginald Dwayne Betts. And he is a lawyer, activist, poet, all these things. And one of the books that he talked about was like How to Raise a Puppy by the Monks of Newskeet, which truly, like, could you imagine this book coming up on this podcast? Like, more, I'm just
twice.
Like blown away.
It is. I feel like their original book might have been How to Raise a Good Dog. And the puppy is like their new one. Sort of. But it might be. I don't know. I could be completely wrong.
I have no idea.
Yeah, I definitely have a copy. But it's funny. And because I think of them because they are German shepherds. And I was like, seriously, after I read it, I was like, I want a German shepherd that like was bred by these monks. Just so I can say that. It's such a weird, bizarre thing.
It's so weird. I feel like maybe they need to volunteer their help for Champ and Major. To like help them, like I understand it's stressful. You just moved into this new house. There's all these people around. Like they're getting near you. I would bite too. You know, they're dogs,
right? Yeah, that's what they do. They're stressed out, and they're rescue dogs, right? Don't they rescue their?
I believe they're rescue dogs. Yeah,
that adds like a little extra element.
Another element. All right, everybody. This is it for Jenny from now. Please check out Jenny's books, Anna Kay and Anna Kay Away. Jenny will be back the last week of May. May 26th, we're discussing Anna Karenina by Leo Tolstoy. We're finally doing a Russian on this podcast. So leave me alone, people. I'm doing it. I read it. Thank you very much. I read it in 20 days. Very proud of myself.
Very proud.
And we're going to discuss it in detail. We are going to spoil that episode. So if you're trying to read along, please make sure you finish it before you listen. And Jenny, thank you.
Thank you. I had such a great time. So much fun.
This is so much fun. And next time we're going to be in person, we're probably going to have like a glass of wine. I don't know. We're going to have a good time. You guys are going to be jealous. It's fine. We're going to be vaccinated by then. Both of us fully 2 weeks out, all of that. Thank you so much. And everybody else, we will see you in the stacks. Thank you all so much for listening, and thank you to Jenny Lee for being my guest. Jenny will be back on Wednesday, May 26th to discuss Anna Karenina by Leo Tolstoy for the Stacks Book Club. Please consider making a donation to the Million Book Project through the link in the show notes. Help us hit our goal of $50,000 towards getting books into prisons nationwide. Make sure you're subscribed to the Stacks wherever you get your podcasts, and if you're listening through Apple Podcasts, be sure to leave a rating and a review. For more from The Stacks, follow us on social media at The Stacks Pod on Instagram and at The Stacks Pod _ on Twitter. And check out our website, thestackspodcast.com. Sebastian Alcala is our sound editor and producer. Our graphic designer is Robin McCrite, and our theme music is from Tegearges. The Stacks is created and produced by me, Tracy Thomas.
Get ready. Coming to Podcast One, it's the Kelly Osbourne and Jeff Beecher Show.
Oh, my God. Do you remember opening night when Mick Jagger crawled out on his hands and knees because someone turned on the smoke machine and that was broken and the whole club almost got evacuated?
With your accent, you're like, oh, no, Mick Jagger.
Continuing the Osbourne tradition, host Kelly Osbourne.
There are days where I wake up and I think that I'm wonderful and I love myself.
Bringing a fresh dose of truth.
And there are days that you wake up and you feel like you're not good enough to even walk out of the door.
Joins best friend and Beecher's Madhouse creator, Jeff Beecher.
For everyone that listens, you're never stopping fixing your head. It's a constant work, just like exercising.
In a raw, real, and crazy, unforgettable podcast.
The whole thing for me with this was, you're so right, Jeff, was like we had to fix our heads because we were both insane.
Timmy was a hoarder. Do you know about this, Donnie?
Yeah, I heard the story.
They let him live in the Hard Rock, and he wouldn't stop eating off the room service plates outside the people's table.
Oh my God, that's
Subscribe and download on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your podcasts.